This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, bundles. They'll do everything they can to save you money. And they will do everything they can to make sure you are fully insured, because customer service means everything to them at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Ellis Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. All right. Nothing like Tuesdays with Neil. Because he is the best. Sir, welcome back.
As always, it's my pleasure to be here. It's great to be here. I hope you guys are having a great day.
And so far, having a great day, made better by your presence. So we appreciate you. Let's get to, we'll start with Saquon Barkley. The Giants, as expected, not going to franchise tag him. He'll be a free agent. How interested are you to see what the market looks like for him and what the number ends up being in a depressed running back market?
I think this really tells the story overall of where this position is going. You have a returning offensive player of the year at the running back position. You have a marquee name like Barkley who has that level of ability. A pure three-down back who can play multiple roles on a team. How much will the market pay for that, as opposed to acquiring a larger contract like San Francisco got with McCaffrey? It says a lot about a lot of the players who are coming up, and I really think this is—I don't want to say like a tentpole moment within the NFL, but you're going to see the history of. The future of this position coming now. This is going to dictate a lot of the younger backs and the direction that they're going to go in, particularly ones that have, without question, an all-around skill set. There are some guys that can play this role in this scheme on these downs, and there are guys that can do all of that, which is Barkley. How much is that worth? How much do they want to say, we're okay putting the bulk of our running game on one guy, and we're going to pay for that? Can running backs as a whole replicate the kind of success that McCaffrey can have in San Francisco playing as often as he does? That would be the hope for a guy like Barkley at that money. I'd imagine there are teams that are going to think about it quite a bit, but you said the magic words, recessed market. They don't have to. There's not really any other competition, by and large, for a guy like Barkley. It's not going to drive it up so much. I think teams are going to get to a ceiling and kind of say this is what it's going to be, and it's probably a contract similar to the one that the Giants gave him already, probably shorter on years. He might get the dollars he's looking for, but I would be surprised if it's longer than a two-year contract. Whether that's the market offering it to him or whether he's not going to sign for that money for longer than 2 years, hoping to get back into free agency if he does well and try to hit it again. But time's running short for him, so probably 2 years, probably something like 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. I think most teams could probably handle that if they are willing to put that much of their offense into one running back. That's really the main question. It's not so much the ability of one player. It's how much do you want to give one guy. McCaffrey's offensive player of the year because he played, plenty of times in his career he didn't play, and the team didn't do so well after he left. That's the risk that teams are taking with the running backs nowadays.
All right. So then there's the Steelers. In the mock draft, the ESPN mock draft, which is close to the piece of paper it should be on probably, but that's all right. As the Steelers' offensive line, first-round offensive line, second-round, they have Zach Frazier, the center from West Virginia, who, by the way, is very, very good. I mean, I saw him in person last year. Like, this guy can play. Does that surprise you that they have an offensive line one and offensive line two?
I think that's, yeah, I don't know if I would do both of them, and I don't think the Steelers would either. I mean, you really got to diversify how you're addressing everybody. And most of that, maybe this is just me, it's financially driven more than anything. Now, they've had situations where they paid the offensive linemen in back-to-back years. Marquise Pouncey and David DeCastro both got paid, I believe, within a year of each other.
Right.
It's just at that point, you've got 40% of your offensive line playing on a large extension if they work out. Now, obviously, you're going to draft the guy assuming he's going to work out if you're willing to take a first-round or second-round pick on him. It's not a bad idea in the sense that, you know, you probably could get a bit better, a bit younger on your offensive line, certainly at the center position, something they represented quickly into the offseason with the release of Mason Cole. Center would definitely be one of the two if they are going to double up. I'll say that. I almost look at center as different. I mean, it's on the offensive line, but that's a position that it really, the high side of your line as a whole gets a lot better if your center is good.
Yeah.
And everything falls apart if it isn't good. So you need to lock that up almost independent of where the other positions are. You can't get away with a bad center. The good center helps everybody else probably more than it becomes a value to you as an individual player. And it's something obviously the Steelers are known for over the years, well, until recently, I guess. But I would not be surprised if pick 20 goes on a center. I think, Frazier would be the guy I'd look at for that. The new JPJ, the kid from Oregon, is a pretty good player as well.
Yes.
I think both of those guys would be there, and it wouldn't be surprising if they're deciding between those two at 20. From there, though, I don't know if you can really afford another offensive lineman that high, which is not to say tried and true Steelers tactic is go round three, round four, get a developmental type of tackle, build him out. Mm-hmm. Very similarly to the one they have in there now, Dan Moore. At this point now, almost it just makes too much financial sense to keep Moore where he is,
yeah,
or where they are at the cap. So, and you can get guards in free agency, in the draft, that you can develop into starters. I don't believe that guards have to be high-end prospects to become good NFL players. So for me, if center is number one, I don't think you want to dip back into the offensive line. I think something really weird happens, though, if they take an offensive lineman at 20 that isn't the center and still have a player that's worth it, starting caliber player available to them in round two. It's a good center draft. I don't know if that's the strategy you want to take. I think if you feel Frazier is your guy, you got to take him at 20. I don't think he's going to last to the 40s or 50s. So that'd be a good move. I'm not against that overall. I do think, though, as we head into free agency right now, this is another completely revamped cornerback room year. They're going to need a lot of guys, a lot of bodies. Not they don't have to be premium picks, but you're going to have to add to it. You're losing a lot of guys. You have questions on other guys. We knew they needed to get younger last year. Now let's remember too. Trice, the kid they drafted in the seventh round last year, was somebody that had big injury concerns. Unfortunately, concerns that were proved to be valid quickly in training camp. But he fell to the seventh round because of those concerns. He's a mid-round player. I think they have a lot of faith in him, so he's coming back. Hopefully he can stay healthy, and he's essentially a new player for him there as well. I think they still need to get younger. They'll want to get younger. They're probably going to add another corner in the draft, and they're going to have to sign one. So what you want to do with that, with Porter playing the way that he did, he'll be the big money guy down the line. Do you want to have another younger player, premium pick player, that's going to have a big contract extension? coming down the line, or do you want to kind of bolster it with veterans, which is really on par for the rest of the NFL right now? You know, I think we've talked about this before. It's the hardest non-quarterback position to play in the game. And a lot of cornerbacks are considered bad, but they're still in the league. I mean, Artie Burns is still in the league. Right. It takes a lot to play the position, not just skill-wise, but health. You can't be injured much and continue to play cornerback in today's NFL. So it's hard to get those veterans at a high level. And that makes the mid-level market very attractive, which is how probably Levi Wallace was able to play until, you know, he couldn't anymore this season. I wouldn't expect him to come back, but they're going to need to find other, you know, Wallace-like cornerbacks. I know that's going to make Steelers fans twitch, but it's hard to play today without a fourth cornerback that's going to look a lot like Levi Wallace. They got to get on the field. They have to know what they're doing, and they have to be able to produce to some degree. The value of that is significant for any team, especially the good ones. They're going to have depth at the cornerback position. So I think they're going to have to hit that up in the draft as well as free agency.
One of the moments of the combine was Xavier Worthy, who cranked out a 4.25 on his first run and then cranked out a 4.21 on his second run. And Worthy had a good college career, no getting around it. But Trey Wingo, to his credit, listed all the guys that ran 4.2s at the combine over the years. And only one, Chris Johnson, really made any kind of significant move in the NFL. What plays in the game do you run 40 yards straight? And what do you think when you see something like that?
I think it's great for him. You know, it shows amazing explosion in athleticism, and that's kind of what you're looking for. But something bad happens if you have a free release to run in a completely straight line for 40 yards in the NFL. And I would argue, if you do, you don't need to run a 4.2. You're probably going to score a touchdown if you can catch the ball, because that is the only situation where that would really be apples to apples applicable. Guys like that, they tend to be better athletes. I would argue, too, though, Dree Archer had a phenomenal combine. He's an incredibly explosive athlete and absolutely lost on the football field.
Yep.
Not a football player. Now, I'm not saying anybody is that. I'm just saying that this is what happened. Guys with that athleticism, you're typically seeing they are excellent athletes. Are they functional players? That's more of the question. I'm not saying that one is related to the other. Chris Johnson was a great player. We saw great things out of Chris Johnson. You can play at that speed. It's just that guys like that usually are maybe a little bit more geared to game the system, so to speak. I shouldn't say game the system, but they're built to run 40s. They're track runners. They're not necessarily football players.
Yep.
That's 4.21, the highest that I've seen at the combine.
Oh no, I've never seen anything like that. No.
Yeah, you're not cracking that kind of heat often. Can he play football is another question. I also, you know, the reverse of this is also true. Just because he ran fast in a straight line doesn't mean he can't play football. It's just not, you know, any event you look at in the combine on its own in a vacuum is not worth much. You have to look at the whole package, and you're putting all of that together to validate the film that you've seen of the player, and in concert with an interview with him to make sure he's the type of guy that you want to come pay money to be a part of a championship team. That's their goal. You get to a point, and we've said this, you get to a point where, you know, the amount over what you're really hoping in to the high end of speed is vanity. You know, not that they're trying to do that or whatever. This nice little contest, it's kind of fun to see who's running what, but that level of speed, it's not functional on a football field. You are rarely moving in a straight line in football, rarely. There are angles. You are cutting and moving. You are not playing with a 10-yard head start on anything. Maybe kick coverage, but they barely even return kicks anymore. So the value of that is right. Relative. It's a good skill to show athleticism, but you have to lump it in with so many other things to get the full picture of the player. Now, if you're just really into guys running fast, and it's the dead of winter and it's not track season, that's a fun event to watch. You can see some world-class athletes clocking some serious numbers. But as far as football goes, I don't want to belittle it. I don't want to downplay it.
Oh, no.
It's not even close to everything. It's nice, but, I hate doing this because there are probably 50 examples right along with this just recently that we could point to. But do you remember John Ross?
Yeah.
John Ross out of Washington, I think.
Yeah.
A receiver thought to be maybe, a round one, round two guy, kind of on the bubble, ran a blistering 40, and Cincinnati took him at 9.
Yep.
I think he had 8 catches in his career. I mean, he didn't do anything. That's 9 overall. Now, a smaller player that's used just as an X, just as, a vertical runner, I don't know how good of a strategy that is necessarily anyway, but that clearly, I think it's fair to say, he did not develop as a professional player. You can't tell me, going back on him, looking at his measurables, looking at everything else about him, you can't tell me he went 9 overall for any reason other than the fact that he ran like a 4.25.
Right, exactly.
Like that's a mistake. What are you doing? You can't put that much into this guy. And then on top of it, don't utilize him in a way that, he might be able to help you out, which today is short space. It's not long speed. You've got to get guys like that the ball somewhere they can turn their shoulders and get upfield. That's when they're valuable. You see Kansas City using guys like that a lot. There's a reason. You asking them to win 30 yards downfield with nothing but speed isn't very helpful if they're not very big. So you get them in space, then you can utilize speed. I think teams are seeing that more and more. But if that's the case, then you don't need a 40-yard time. You want to look at their shuttle time. You want to look at 10-yard splits. How quick are they in space? How fast can they get their shoulders square and get upfield? That's more important. So it's a combination of a lot of different things. But I think, the wrong team can look at things the wrong way and read into something that just shouldn't be looked at the way they're seeing it.
I was just up in your neck of the woods. I was in Minneapolis over the weekend. And, of course, a lot of the talk was what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins. And now Russell Wilson's been released. What's your thought on those two?
I think Cousins is an excellent example of a player that, when given time, when meshed in with a coach, they brought out more than what they were when they started. I thought Cousins was playing legitimately at a top 5 level in the NFL.
Yep.
I was at the San Francisco game. He had an interception early, which I would have put more on the receiver, not really running through the route as much as Cousins' fault. But Cousins dominated the rest of that game. He was sharp.
Yeah.
Played very, very well. And we saw that a lot up until he got hurt. Minnesota would have been a competitive football team if Cousins had stayed healthy. Now, I'm not a doctor. I really shouldn't speculate on this kind of thing. But it around the league. The guys that make a lot of money, they can afford treatments that perhaps aren't legal in the U.S., but are legal in well-developed allies of the U.S., i.e. Germany. Kirk Cousins can heal from an Achilles injury a lot better than a guy that was drafted in the 7th round last year. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
I'm not worried about an injury with Cousins. Not an Achilles, not something that was clean the way his was. It's not a compounding type of problem. It's not a degenerative problem. I think he'll be fine injury-wise. And I think because of that, that's why it seems anyway. We never know exactly, although Cousins has said the structure of the deal is important, which we can imply it really means, guaranteed, which is what he got on his last contract. I think he wants something fully guaranteed. That's his mark. And the Vikings don't necessarily want to pay it. Maybe they're not in the best position to pay it. Maybe they can make more hay spreading that money around and looking to get a younger quarterback in while they got to pay some other marquee positions. Not an unfamiliar strategy, but I'd say this. I think Kevin O'Connell is a rising star in the NFL. I think he's done a fantastic job with Cousins and developing an offense that would have been very competitive. Keep in mind, you lost Jefferson for a good chunk of that time as well. O'Connell had to perform miracles to get that team moving anywhere. And it was with a totally revamped defense. So they're in a really good spot with Cousins. I would think at this stage of Cousins' career, if the difference is $10 million over 3 years, he would side with Minnesota. It doesn't really seem like that's the direction it's going to go. I'm very curious what level of contract he's going to ask for. Atlanta seems to be the team that is expected to sign him. I kind of figured that would be the case last year. If he went anywhere, it was going to be in Atlanta. Watching poor Desmond Ridder try to navigate his way in the NFL was almost as fun as watching Kenny Pickett was. Atlanta, his wife's from Atlanta. I could, that makes sense. You make those decisions, those kinds of decisions when you get a bit older, and they can be very competitive financially. On the complete polar opposite end of that is Russell Wilson. I don't know why you would bother. And I know that I'm not even sure what the genesis of this was, but whether it was him saying he would take a minimum contract, he absolutely would not do that. You couldn't do that. You can't. You're not going to be taken seriously if you sign for a minimum contract. You'll get benched for the guy they're going to draft. Whatever team would sign Russell Wilson is drafting a quarterback. That's right, the role he is in now.
Yep.
Denver's decision to cut him isn't as stark as people make it out to be. They're not losing cap space. They're not able to move around the number that is there for Russell Wilson, whether he's on the team or not. So they don't really lose ground. What they're saying is, we don't want Russell Wilson on our team. This is a sunk cost. There's no point. If we're paying him the same to get rid of him as we are to keep him, we're going to draft a guy, obviously.
Right.
We may as well not have him here.
Right.
That's why Russell Wilson would want to sign a larger contract anyway, because they would cut him without thought of it after year one if he didn't have any. Right. There was no stake in the team keeping him. Mm-hmm. You've got to, make an offer too good to be, refused if you're in Wilson's position. So I don't know where he would end up going, but I think pretty obvious. I mean, he's going to get a couple million bucks. I don't think it's going to be a high-end deal, probably incentive-laden. But my guess would be, one of the higher-end teams wanting an experienced veteran to go along with a rookie. And, tell them all you want, this is a competition, but it's not going to be a competition if it's a top three, top four quarterback in this market. And, hey, maybe it's Minnesota. I don't know how much money he would want, but Washington, that's a team that's highly likely to draft a very good quarterback that's likely to start right away. Not to guarantee that he's going to be a backup, but I really think there's value in that veteran starting level guy, and that's where he is.
Always a pleasure, my good friend. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong on the show, brought to you by good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, the best in the business. Customer service means everything to them. Final half hour next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motors Company, and Purdy Insurance. We are here in the Sunbury Motors studio. We just heard from Neil Coulon, talked a little bit about the NFL and a lot about the Steelers. The most interesting part to me as a Seahawks fan is maybe what happens to Russell Wilson. I'm a man with a Russell Wilson bobblehead on his desk at work, and tried like heck if we had a boy 8 years ago to talk my wife into naming her Wilson, but we had a girl. We went with Madeline, so I didn't get my wish. But you know, it's just amazing to me how wrong it went in Denver. You know, I thought it was. I always put it this way to people.
He struggled, man.
I know,
but just simple. And you know what? it didn't look to me like he was. It looked to me like he was heavier, right? And I think that affected him. He also didn't have a good team around him.
No.
Right? And but he didn't help.
No, and what I was going to say was, I think if Russell Wilson wasn't on my favorite team for a while, he probably would be one of the athletes that would annoy me. And I can see why people are annoyed by him. And I think that's part of the reason is I'm not sure some of his teammates like him all the time.
Oh no, he had. I mean, he wanted separate entrances. I mean, there were a lot of things that were like, "Hey, look, I'm Russell Wilson. I won a Super Bowl." It's like, "Hey, yo, man, you're part of the team. Like, that's be part of the team." He wasn't like that.
And maybe this humbles him a little bit, and maybe that's good for whoever picks him up.
We'll see. We'll find out. Dartmouth men's basketball. Voted 13-2 today to join its local service employees union. It is the first time that any group of college athletes has taken a public action as employees of their school and potentially set a precedent that could significantly alter college sports. Here we go. Here we go. The regional director of the National Labor Relations Board ruled that they were employees of the school. Now, Dartmouth tried to get this delayed by 10 days, and they lost. And so they took the vote, and it was 13-2. And the next step now is bargaining with the school. Now, the players are saying they hope that the other Ivy League teams will follow suit to create a conference-wide collective bargaining unit. There's another case involving USC, which is important to keep an eye on. The Los Angeles case is scheduled to resume later in the spring. And the regional director of the National Labor Relations Board is likely to make an initial ruling by the end of the current academic year. So that would be before June 30th. Remember, USC, like Dartmouth, is a private school. But here's something that needs to be considered. Like, okay, they're private schools. They're doing what they want. Okay, we got it. But here's something that needs to be considered. What entities aren't public but are private entities? Keep this in mind. The NCAA and conferences are private entities. Oh. So, legal experts, who, by the way, are not on a roll lately, I'd like to point out. it's kind of like being a weather person outside of San Diego. say that schools will likely have to decide in the coming years whether to treat athletes as employees or make significant changes to reduce the amount of control coaches and athletic departments have over day-to-day life of athletes. All right. Now, Laura Sachs is the one who is the regional director of the NLRB. My apologies. She decided the players are employees, even though they don't receive athletic scholarships or generate large profits. Profits? How delusional are you? Dartmouth men's basketball generates no profit. They lose money left and right, even though they don't generate a lot of profit. Right? Now, do they generate revenue? Sure. Does it balance the expenses? No, not even close. Okay. Because they don't generate large profits. They generate no profit. What are you talking about? They say that the coaches and athletic department officials have control over their time and conduct. Okay. Sachs ruled that the free apparel, tickets, and other support they receive, which non-athletes at Dartmouth don't qualify as compensation. Okay. Okay, that's interesting. Oh, boy. That's interesting. I don't know what she means by that. Okay, free apparel and tickets, yeah, they do, that's compensation. But what does other support mean? Does other support mean the training room? Does other support mean the, I mean, I don't know what that means. I mean.
Tutors? Like, just yeah, all that other stuff together, maybe?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, because you would have to, okay, say you're not affiliated with Dartmouth or any school. See, this is what, something I've pointed out many, many times.
Okay.
In terms of compensation. So you have your scholarship. Contrary to what the world believes, it actually is worth money. Okay? For all of you out there, just a quick show of hands. How many of you had to pay, either yourself or you have paid for, or help pay for somebody's college education? Yeah, a lot of hands are up. Which means out of your own pocket, you have sent checks to colleges and universities. So it's worth something. What about room and board? Yeah, I had to pay for that too. Okay, great, okay. What about the food? Yeah, I had to pay for that too. Well, so far, for a student athlete, they have training table, room, board, right? And their scholarship paid for. Now here's the next part. And I'm not, look, I think in the end, collective bargaining is going to be the key to solving some of, not completely solving, but a part of the solution for college athletes, especially if Congress is not going to get involved, which I don't think they're going to, but that's me. But let's take other parts. You're a Kentucky basketball player. How much does it cost to rent John Calipari? Okay. For a year. How much would it have cost a Duke player to rent Mike Krzyzewski for a year? Coaching, training. How much would it cost to rent the weight room and the strength coach for a year? How much would it cost to rent the hot tub, cold tubs in the training room for a year? How much would it cost you as the student athlete to rent the trainer for a year? On and on we go as to what was entailed in the scholarship. I mean, you're a football player. How much? You're a running back. How much does it cost to rent James Franklin for a year? How much does it cost to rent Jaywan Sider for a year? How much does it cost to rent Andy Koltynicki for a year? How much would it cost to rent Chuck Losey and his staff, Alvin and everybody, for a year? How much would it cost to rent Andy Mutnam and the training staff for a year? How much would it cost to rent and have at your disposal Wayne Sebastianelli as your doctor for a year? Right? How much would it cost to rent the hot tub, cold tub for a year? The pool, the sports performance equipment in the back. How much would that cost? Plus you get apparel and tickets. I'm just asking. My point is there's much more to this scholarship than just the scholarship. And the name, image, and likeness part on top of it. Now, in the end, could collective bargaining put parameters on this and at least some semblance of structure around it that is needed? No question. Now, that Los Angeles case later this spring is really worth looking at. Because in that case, the petitioner is arguing that athletes at USC are jointly employed by their school, their conference, and the NCAA. Now, USC is a private institution. But so is the Big Ten. And so is the NCAA. That's why that ruling, because the petitioner has put not just USC in there, but the conference and the NCAA in there. That swings their way. Now the door is open to maybe having collective bargaining. Now again, the federal aid, remember the National Labor Relations Board, does not have jurisdiction over employment issues at government institutions, and that includes athletes at public schools. Remember that. Okay? The National Labor Relations Board does not have jurisdiction over employment issues at government institutions. That includes athletes at public schools. The Dartmouth case is over private schools. Different story. So at least initially that would be places such as USC, Northwestern. I'm trying to think who else is a private school. Duke, Tulane. I think is Miami a private school? Boston College, Notre Dame, right?
Yep, it's private. U of M is private.
You doubt me.
I didn't doubt. I Googled, though.
Good. Now, Charlie Baker, the head of the NCAA, told ESPN last month that, quote, the student-athlete advisory councils we work with all basically said, quote, we're all in on compensation. We think NIL deals are a great thing. The enhanced education benefits, that's really important for many of us. But employment, he claims that's not where they land. That's one of the reasons why they keep pointing out the Northwestern case. They never point out in the Northwestern case that Northwestern voted no. Years ago. You want to know why? Because they all liked the deal they had. Now, has the landscape changed? Yeah. By the way, Dartmouth, you're wondering about the men's basketball program, hits the road tonight to play Harvard. They are currently, to their credit, in last place in the league. So as employees, performance-wise, are you tempted now to fire them?
I think that, you know, that's something that people don't think of if that happens, is that's a possibility now, too. Not firing, maybe, until the collective bargaining, but...
Do you want to know what they've done this year? Well, they're actually succeeded at voting, but they're not successful in the court. Dartmouth this year has lost 9 games in a row. They're 1-12 in the Ivy League. They're 5-21 overall. Ooh. But unlike Virginia, at least they score. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Oh, by the way, that Dartmouth game tonight is actually in Hanover. It's a home game. Senior night.
You gonna see if the king can get there for you?
No. I don't think it's gonna happen. They've drawn 8,105 at home this year. They're averaging 675 people per game. So let's just see. Dartmouth Athletic tickets.
I'm guessing they're not making a profit off of that. You're right.
If you want a chair back, it's $20. Youth get in for $10. General admission is, well, let's see. They don't have general admission. They should. they need it. Let's see if there's any StubHub. Season tickets. Here we go. Tickets available now for Dartmouth basketball on StubHub. Let's see.
I'm guessing they're going for lower than list price.
Yes, they are. Let's get $9 to $12. There we go. Feel much better now. So let's just take the base number. Okay, let's take the base number. Let's see, 675 per game. Let's just go for the highest number possible, $20 per ticket. They're making $13,500 per game. Times 12 home games, which would be $162,000. Okay. Yeah. Kind of a low number. Greg Pickle, Cale Sanderson tomorrow. All right. This half hour brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up, routine to difficult, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And, of course, don't forget about NIL Game Changers. Brewers Outlet, Purdy Insurance, our sponsors of the show today. All making sure that the suit lives the life of luxury.